back to another edition of the Prepper Recon Podcast. Our mission is to bring you great interviews with preppers from around the world so you can be better informed and better prepared for everything from a hurricane to the end of the world as we know it.
KDArmor.com is your one-stop shop for the most affordable body armor period. With packages starting at $169.99 and free shipping on every order, KD offers soft armor and rifle threat rated armor up to level 4. Go to KDArmor.com and get your body armor today while you still can. Mention this ad and receive a free tactical scarf for a limited time with any body armor package.
Today's guest is Terry Mulville from Radiant Rocks, LLC. Terry, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me again.
Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure to have you on. Now, you're in Wisconsin, right?
Right. I'm in the, I guess you'd say, south central part of Wisconsin. I'm about an hour north of Madison. And we're transplants from Chicago, so it's a few degrees a little cooler here in the winter. But yeah, I'm a upper Midwest guy.
So you're no stranger to bad winters then. Right. What are some of the things you're doing to get ready for winter right now?
We have a small cattle operation, so I want to make sure things are in place for adequate feed for the cattle going into the winter, making sure that the water facilities stay open and operate as efficiently as possible. Got the snow plow going on the truck and, blowing out the water lines. So, those are the outside considerations, and then, of course, we want to make sure that we have a sufficient source of wood, because we do rely on our wood stove, our eco stove, for heating.
And do you keep emergency supplies in your vehicle just in case you get stuck in a snowstorm?
Yeah, my wife has the hand warmers. You break open the package, and there's that. We have blankets and gloves and all those things. So, yeah, that's always a possibility. I'm always amazed when I go by a school in the winter, the kids pile out in literally T-shirts, and there's no consideration to, well, what happens? What happens if the car doesn't start or I end up in a snowdrift? I'm just on the other end of the spectrum as far as being prepared.
And there's climate experts like Dane Wigginton that are suggesting that we may be approaching a period of global cooling rather than global warming. More and more scientists see this as the possibility, citing everything from geoengineering to solar minimums as being the cause for global cooling. I suppose someone in your neck of the woods has to keep up with weather patterns, right?
Yeah, I'm really sensitive to what I'm learning about the regular recurring cycles of the sun, and as I understand it, we're going into the back end of the solar cycle 24, and various astrophysicists and solar scientists have remarked that the drop-off in solar activity has been precipitous, and I don't know if I saw it on your website or somewhere else, that one remarked that they haven't seen a drop like this in 10,000 years. People like retired scientist, NASA scientist, John L. Casey, has come out with some pretty interesting stuff in his book, The Cold Sun, Robert Felix in Not by Fire, but by Ice. And it seems like the question now is, are we going to be going into a Dalton minimum or a Maunder minimum? And if it's a Maunder minimum, I think everybody better hunker down, because you being in Florida, you're gonna get through it okay. But we are the breadbasket up here to a great extent, and if we do get into shorter growing seasons, it's going to impact everybody.
Yeah, and we have no soil here, so all we've got is sand. So if that's the case, if you have to eat what grows in Florida, everybody better get used to coconuts, because we can't grow a whole lot else here. We have to, I have to do everything in a raised bed, and still it can be rather challenging to grow anything here. Now, Drudge Report had a link to an article called Cold Sun Rising, and it cited the research of Professor Zarkova of UK's Northumbria University. The article suggests that in addition to cooler temperatures, the coming grand solar minimum may also bring an increase in snowfall. I guess that would be a good reason to prepare as well, right?
Right, exactly, yeah. And I did read that article from her in the UK. There's another well-respected Russian solar scientist that I can't approximate the pronunciation of his name, but he's very well-respected, and he stretches the global cooling period, minimum ice age, if you will, out to 100 to 200 years. I think others have said starting in 2030, we're going to have a good, strong decade of extremely challenging winters. And I think, again, John L. Casey actually mentioned that the grain belt or the agricultural belt that runs through the mid part of the country is going to drop by 200 miles, which means that our farms here in Wisconsin become ranches. And again, the overriding theme is food is going to be a very challenging concern going forward. So in our own way, we're trying to prepare, as I mentioned, with our self-sufficiency. We have a water-pumping windmill that the Amish erected for us. So just deviating a little bit, if we ever did have a power down, a grid down situation, we can pump water, and we can heat our house, and we do have X number of months of food set aside. And I talk to people, and I say, you know, you have life insurance and homeowners insurance. How about a little something, you know, in the larder to if there was a grid down event? And it just seems to escape everybody that it's you don't just pick up a TV clicker and say, I'm ready.
Yeah, there's a learning curve with just about everything. And you mentioned your Eco Stove earlier. Can you tell us a little bit about those? It's a masonry heater, right?
Right. It's a derivation of a masonry heater. In our last interview last March, I touched upon masonry heaters as being old world technology that was developed to extract as much heat that's produced from a burning piece of wood before it leaves the house as possible. It's a huge, large heat sink. And it's very common throughout Europe and Russia. But here in this country, with cheap energy prices, people really don't feel the need to have a backup source of heat like that. The Eco Stove, and so consequently, there isn't much construction of masonry heaters because it's typically done during the construction of a new house. You pour a foundation for the masonry heater, and then you block up to the main level, fabricate or erect the masonry heater, and then just exhaust it. But it's something that it's not typically a retrofit, and they're very expensive. And a company in the UK, Land Event, that does extensive work with chimneys and things like that, developed this technology that draws upon the construction on the concept of a masonry heater, but instead of using masonry materials, they use silicone carbide, and it's an extremely hard material. It's got great heat retention, can withstand extreme temperatures, and the nice thing about it is that it can be a retrofit in an existing home. Depending upon what the floor structure is, maybe the need for some column jacks underneath it. It's modular. It can be constructed in an hour, hour and a half, and it has the same characteristics as a masonry heater. Masonry heaters and the Eco Stove have a firebox that typically produces firebox temperatures of between 1,500 and 2,000 degrees Fahrenheit. But by the time that the flue gases leave the system, they have been they're at about 300 to 400 degrees Fahrenheit, and the difference is the absorption of that extreme heat before it leaves the house into in the case of the Eco Stove into the silicone carbide, and it's done through extensive channeling, typically a wood stove or a fireplace. You have the firebox, and then directly overhead is the chimney. And so the chimney is almost an extension of the firebox. And so if the firebox gets to temperatures of 700 to 900 degrees, the flue right above it isn't much cooler. It's almost like you're just directly exhausting out the heat that could go into the house right up the flue. So with masonry heaters and the silicone carbide eco stove, the heat rises up, hits the cap or at the top of the firebox, and then is channeled down around the outside of the firebox between the outside shell and the inner firebox around and through the system. And then by the time it finally connects to the flue, that difference of 1,500 to 2,000 degrees temperature in the firebox has been pulled into the mass of masonry or the silicone carbide. It's absorbed and then released over 7 to 12 hours. And it's an even heat. It's a radiated heat, so there's no stratification that you would have convected through a typical cast iron or steel wood-burning unit. So that the temperatures toward the ceiling aren't much different than the temperature you'd find during closer to the floor. Another aspect of masonry heaters and the EcoStove silicone carbide unit is that they burn at an extremely elevated temperature within the firebox. You know, typically you might, you wouldn't in Florida, but up here, if you drive by somebody's house and you notice there's blue smoke coming out of a chimney, that blue smoke represents elevated levels of CO2 emissions. To burn off what normally leaves as gaseous volatiles, unspent fuel, you need to get firebox temperatures of 1,100 degrees Fahrenheit or higher. So if your wood stove is burning at, again, 700 to 900 degrees within the firebox, you're burning off the solid part of the wood, but the gaseous volatiles, the CO2 emissions, are boiling off the wood and they're leaving as unspent fuel, the blue smoke that we see. But with a masonry heater and the EcoStove silicone carbide heater, they burn at such an elevated temperature that you're burning not only the solid part of the wood, but the gaseous volatiles as well. And so you're not only burning off what leaves as noxious emissions, but also you're extracting more heat from a potential fuel source. A masonry heater will burn anywhere between 1 to 2 grams per hour emissions, and typically a masonry heater will only burn for an hour or an hour and a half. Same with the EcoStove. You have a very hot, quick fire. Everything is burned down to a fly ash. Within an hour to an hour and a half, the EcoStove's emissions run at about 2.1 grams per hour, but you're done with it in an hour to an hour and a half. The EPA threshold for acceptable levels of emissions are about 4 grams per hour, but that goes on for hours and hours. And I believe, if I'm not mistaken, the EPA lowered their threshold for emissions from 7.5 grams per hour down to 4. So in all cases, masonry heaters or the EcoStove were well below the mandated EPA threshold for acceptable emissions. So getting more energy, more heat from a piece of wood, lower emissions, and more of the heat kept in the house and slowly released over extended periods of time makes these units ideal for people who can rely on biomass for their source of heating. And one other aspect I should touch upon is the even heat, not only the even heat distribution from floor to ceiling with very, very little stratification, but this radiated energy finds its way through extensively throughout a house. If you go up to a cast iron stove or a steel stove and you stand in front of it on a cold day, it'll feel good. But if you step back from it, the convected heat is rising toward the ceiling, and it tends to be localized. But with masonry heaters and the EcoStove, the heat permeates its way around the house, and it provides whole house warmth, as if you will. So for people up here in Wisconsin and the upper Midwest, it's something that I think will eventually catch on as being the more efficient, productive go-to technology for whole house heating in cold climates.
We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. I've personally been buying gold and silver from JM Bullion for over 2 years. They offer the best prices over spot that I can find, and I've never had a problem with an order. If you're looking to trade in some of your fiat paper for real money, check out jmbullion.com today.
When disaster strikes, it's too late to prepare. PrepperRecon.com offers MOLLE-compatible individual first aid kits for your home, auto, or bug-out bag. These kits have everything you need to address a traumatic injury, including an Israeli battle dressing, quick clot, EMT shears, suture kit, Steri-Strips, tourniquet, ACS chest seal, tough strip bandages, gauze, and so much more. $89 includes shipping. To buy your individual first aid kit, go to PrepperRecon.com and click the store tab at the top of the homepage. Order today before it's too late.
And so I guess that's much more efficient than a standard fireplace. And I guess that means you have to cut a lot less wood. Can you give us any type of metrics to how much less wood a masonry heater is going to use compared to a fireplace?
Yeah, I think, and don't quote me on this, Mark, but there are people who have, and I don't know if they're banned now, but these outdoor wood boilers, and they'll go through 8 cords, which is just an egregious amount of wood. And you'll drive by one of these that are placed outside, and they're an outdoor boiler. They heat a jacket of water that's pumped into the house, and they just kind of puff away at low temperatures. And, of course, there's the blue smoke. And at the end of the heating season, they'll go in with a claw hammer and knock out all the built-up creosote inside the firebox. But the Eco Stove and a masonry heater will use 1/2 to 2/3 less wood. So you're using a lot less wood, and you're getting a lot more energy out of it. You're burning it at higher temperatures to burn the solid part of the wood, the gaseous volatiles, and you're capturing it before it leaves the home. So it's a lot less wood chopping and splitting you have to do. I think it was Harrison Ford noted, if you chop and split your own wood, it burns faster. It was kind of a joke, but
yeah,
it's something that those of us who go out and split wood can appreciate, producing a lot less firewood.
Sure, and even with the conveniences of a chainsaw. That's really, really valuable. But in a grid down situation where you can't obtain fuel for a chainsaw, that's absolutely priceless, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, my wife and I go over these scenarios, as I'm sure a lot of your audience rehashes. We don't have to qualify your audience or pre-qualify your audience as being aware of some of the important things to have on hand. A 2-cycle motor oil, you know, to run your chainsaw is a big deal. And so all these things that we just take for granted because they're there, all of a sudden, you know, you conserve your resources and your energies. And that's what we're all about. We have a lot of friends who, you know, think we're kind of nuts for going this extra mile and being self-sufficient. But we feel a lot more comfortable about, you know, our situation. And when things you know, power down or whatever, how many bodies can a household, because, you know, we'll be warm, we'll have water, and we'll have some amount of food, and to the point where we have to go out and, you know, split wood or do the necessary things to be like the lifestyle was 100 years ago, we'll be further down the road as far as being prepared in those situations.
And back to the food and the solar minimum. If we have something like that, it's just going to be, we're just going to see higher food prices. There's really no other way around it because there's going to be a lot more demand and a lot less supply. So are you experimenting with any crops that you can run longer into the fall and plant earlier in the spring?
You know, we've listened to a couple of podcasts. There's a fellow in Quebec who has really perfected agricultural production, vegetables pretty much, using the raised bed system and transplanting things in a very tight cropping situation so that it prevents weeds from growing between the plants and the need for weeding. But on our own homestead, we raise beef cattle, and we tried to get something that was going to be as hardy as possible, assuming colder temperatures. We raise Scottish Island cattle, and as hardy as beef cattle are compared to, for instance, dairy cattle. The Scottish Highland are that much more hardy compared to the beef cattle. And so our focus is on, you know, keeping the herd healthy and growing and producing for ourselves primarily and friends and family after that. So we don't maybe have the most well-rounded diet as far as a lack of preparation or self-sufficiency for vegetables, but we'll eat.
Yeah, there's probably going to be somebody that'll trade you for a nice sirloin or a cheeseburger.
Yeah, we think about that. You know, if you're hungry, what does even precious metal mean? You know, I mean,
sure.
If you're a day away from starvation and you wave, you know, a silver coin in somebody's face, it doesn't matter if you need to eat. And so we're kind of hunkering down for the basics.
Sure. That's right. Sounds like good advice. Now, how do folks get in touch with you to learn more about Eco Stoves?
Well, we've evolved. Our initial thrust in renewables and self-sufficiency was for solar, but we think in a go-to situation, in all cases, biomass is the way to go. So our business now is Radiant Rocks LLC. My son is a mason who can erect masonry heaters. We can market the Eco Stove. You can find the Eco Stove online. Just do a search for Eco Stove, and there's an 800 number there. That's going to be, we're in the process of getting that going, but you can always email either myself, Terry at radiantrocks.us, Terry at radiantrocks.us, or you can email Eco Stove right on their website. I think there's a link, and get more information about it.
All right, great. And we'll have links to that in today's show notes. We'll have a link to for your email, and then we'll also have a link to the Eco Stove so people can go and check those out. Terry, thanks so much for taking time to come on the show today.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thanks very much, Mark.
In the days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, a global empire arises like a phoenix from the ashes of the world that was. The emerging order is unified by a new global currency and a single world religion, which are mandated by an imposed UN treaty. In the interest of unity and peace, a zero-tolerance policy for dissenters is enacted and strictly enforced. Hunted down like common criminals for daring to resist the state, Noah Parker's group will have to rely on faith and wits to endure the powers of darkness, which are quickly consuming the earth. Buy your copy of The Days of Noah, Book 3, Perdition, by best-selling author Mark Goodwin in paperback, Kindle, or audio edition from Amazon.com today.